This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The headlines: Tehran denounces Israeli PM's delusional claims against Iran as an attempt to forge an identity for himself and the illegitimate Zionist regime. The Iranian army holds a large-scale military exercise in the Oman Sea and north of the Indian Ocean. And football fans across the world mourn the death of Brazilian legend Pelé. Hello and welcome, everybody. Here in the Iranian capital, Tehran, this is World News. Our top story for this half hour: Iran's foreign ministry spokesman has slammed as delusional the Israeli prime minister's claims against the Islamic Republic. Nasser Kanani says Benjamin Netanyahu is trying to forge an identity for himself and the illegitimate Israeli regime. Kanani says the Israeli regime has for 70 years been suffering from an identity crisis accompanied by genocide, looting, forced displacement, and many other human rights violations. He said these atrocities are the result of the wrong policies of the US, UK, and some other European countries in supporting the regime. Kanani stressed that Palestine is indestructible, while the Israeli regime is doomed to decline. Netanyahu was sworn in as Israeli prime minister on Thursday in a comeback as the head of a hard-right cabinet. In his address to parliament, he accused Iran of seeking to develop a nuclear bomb, an allegation Tehran has repeatedly denied. Iranians hold demonstrations to commemorate the 2009 nationwide rallies in support of the Islamic Republic that put an end to months of riots. The protests are being held across the country to mark what's called the Ninth of Day. The name refers to an occasion on December the 30th, 2009, when millions of people all over Iran took to the streets to condemn the riots that had followed the same year's presidential elections. The rallies put an end to months of foreign orchestrated unrest and brought back security.
Thousands turned out on Thursday to commemorate the 13th anniversary of the 2009 nationwide rallies that put an end to the post-election unrest back then and also renewed their allegiance to the Islamic establishment. I want to tell the whole world that even if all our enemies unite to defeat us, we will all defend our leader and our country.
I have two messages, one for our enemies and one for our people. To the enemies, I say, you cannot promote an anti-hijab culture in Iran. And to our people, I say, we should remain vigilant regarding the enemy's plots against the Islamic Republic.
The demonstrators also denounced any act of violence and sabotage by foreign-backed rioters against the Islamic Republic.
Anyone who believes in God and holds onto that belief will eventually be rewarded by God. This verse of the Holy Quran applies to the situation we're in today, so it's very important to show our full support for the leader.
According to a statement read at the end of the rallies, Iranians will not tolerate any acts of sabotage that would jeopardize the security and territorial integrity of the country.
I have been taking part in popular demonstrations because it's very important to keep the memory of our martyrs alive, all those who lost their lives so that we can live in a peaceful environment and an independent country.
We are here to pledge allegiance to the leader and to commemorate the rallies that put an end to the foreign-backed riots 13 years ago. We are here to say that we will support Ayatollah Khamenei till the last drop of our blood.
The occasion, dubbed the Ninth of Day Epic, refers to the huge demonstrations held in Tehran and other cities across Iran on the ninth of the month of Day in the Persian calendar, which falls on December 30th, in support of the Islamic Republic. The rallies restored calm in the country and put an end to the post-election unrest, and therefore every year Iranians mark the occasion by taking part in nationwide demonstrations.
More than anything, this is a show of solidarity. People have turned out in the capital, Tehran, to show their support for leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei, and also to show that they are as vigilant as they were back in 2009. Gisumi Shah Ahmadi, Tehran.
Well, the Iranian Army's Navy has staged a large-scale military exercise in the Sea of Oman and north of the Indian Ocean. The drills are aimed at testing indigenously built military equipment and enhancing the country's preparedness against potential threats. Yusuf Jalali reports on that.
The Iranian Army repels American vessels trying to violate Iran's southern waters. This is one of the scenarios of the first phase of a massive naval drill staged by the Iranian Army's Navy. Codenamed Zulfaghar, the maneuver is conducted over an area stretching from the Persian Gulf Strait of Hormuz to the Sea of Oman and north of the Indian Ocean.
The large-scale Zulfaghar maneuver is underway with the goal of integrating our network of armed forces and testing our naval defense capabilities. In this drill, we have carried out different defensive and offensive operations using our own domestically developed military equipment.
The drill involved all of the four branches of the Iranian army in 3 days of exercises. On the first day, the Navy conducted beaching or amphibious operations, which involved Marines in an operation ashore aimed at assaulting the enemy's coastal units.
Beaching an amphibious operation is an Iranian initiative which has long been adopted by different navies around the world. It's an effective way of breaking into the enemy's coast. Beaching has advanced over time according to the advances in the hardware, but the idea and the way it's implemented remains the same.
The first phase of the maneuver saw the use of the latest hardware built domestically by the Iranian armed forces, including surveillance and reconnaissance drones such as Ababil 3 and Mohajer 6, which can also conduct tactical and combat missions. The drill also involved the use of surface-to-surface missiles such as Dehlaviye guided missile to protect the Iranian beach against the enemy's amphibious operations.
The Iranian Navy says this is a routine drill which is staged every year to boost its naval force and fine-tune its homegrown military equipment. It says using its weapons, it is now fully prepared to confront any threat to Iran's territorial waters. Yusuf Jalali from the location of the drill.
Commander of the Iranian Army Drills, Rear Admiral Habibullah Sayeri, warns Iran's enemies that the army will respond to any attempt to violate the country's territorial integrity.
We can say that the equipment that you see used in the drills today, they are fully indigenous. There are different systems such as air defense systems, the radar systems, different types of missiles, air-to-surface, surface-to-air, and different types of missiles, torpedoes, and the destroyers, the submarines, the tanks, the personnel carriers, all the equipment and the drones. We have reached the point that these are all manufactured domestically. This means that we have self-confidence. We have become self-reliant as the Army of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Within our armed forces, we are tasked with defending the territorial integrity, the independence, and the Islamic establishment. So this indicates our might to defend our territorial integrity, that includes our sea, air, and land borders, and to protect our nation. And the enemies must know that in case of any aggression or in case of jeopardizing our interests in the sea, there's going to be they will be threatened. As the leader said, the era of hit and run has come to an end. So if anyone takes any action against us, the enemy will be remorseful.
Brazil is marking the first of 3 days of national mourning for football legend Pelé in Brazil. Pelé played for Santos, and fans flocked to the stadium there to leave flowers. The death of the three-time World Cup winner drew a wave of tributes from around the globe. Pelé was honored by the football world as a player who actually made football the beautiful game. The football prodigy scored a world record of nearly 1,300 goals in almost as many matches during a career spanning some two decades. Let's listen to some fans remembering the football icon and genius.
And yeah, it's quite sad that he's gone. You know, we're all going to miss him. And it's sad for sport, and he played a big role in sport.
Obviously a great player, possibly the best player.
What will always be remembered for his what he brought to football.
He took Brazil to the World Cup and so many other things. I thought he even became an asset, Brazilian asset. He gave football a new name, a new brand.
Pelé died Thursday at the Albert Einstein Hospital in Sao Paulo. He'd been in increasingly fragile health, battling kidney problems and colon cancer. Pelé underwent surgery for the latter in September 2021, followed by chemotherapy. Well, the Russian president has called for an increase in military cooperation with China as he hailed the two countries' efforts to counter Western influence. Vladimir Putin made remarks via video link with his Chinese counterpart. Putin emphasized the importance of Sino-Russian strategic partnership as a stabilizing factor in the face of unprecedented Western pressure and provocations. The Kremlin leader referred to Xi Jinping as his dear friend and said that he would be expecting the Chinese leader at the Kremlin on a state visit in the coming spring. Well, Russia has expressed deep concern after Belarus claimed it had downed a Ukrainian missile on its territory. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov highlighted the close military ties between Russia and Belarus and said they were in constant dialogue and coordination. The Kremlin's comments came after Belarus air defense forces said they shot down a Ukrainian surface-to-air missile near the Ukraine border. Belarus says it's unlikely that the missile had entered its airspace by accident, accusing Ukraine of trying to provoke a regional conflict. Kiev said it would investigate the incident, suggesting it was a Russian provocation. Belarus has recently intensified its military cooperation with Russia and stationed Russian troops and armaments in the country. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov says Moscow's relations with the EU have reached their lowest point, warning that it's not business as usual with the bloc. Russia says the bloc's policies only hurt the well-being of its own citizens. Moscow has accused the West of prolonging the war in Ukraine by providing weapons to Kiev.
Oil relations between Russia and the EU has reached its lowest point. That's according to the Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. The top Russian diplomat says Moscow will not do business as usual with the EU, warning that it would find countries to work with beyond Europe. Lavrov further accused the EU of declaring, quote, a hybrid war in Moscow, by unquestioningly following the U.S. He said Brussels' policies have only hurt the interests and well-being of EU citizens themselves. Lavrov has also accused the U.S. of barring EU nations from conducting dialogue on energy with Moscow. This despite the fact that Russia's supplies of cheap gas to Europe has provided the continent with, quote, unprecedented prosperity for decades. Naturally, there will be no more business as usual with such counterparties. We do not intend either to knock on closed doors or initiate any joint projects. The world is not just the European Union for us, and we have lots of friends and like-minded nations elsewhere. The war between Russia and Ukraine started back in February. Since then, the West, spearheaded by the U.S., have imposed waves of unprecedented economic sanctions on Moscow while supplying large consignments of heavy weaponry to Kiev. The Kremlin has said that the sanctions and the Western military assistance will prolong the war.
Well, last year it was $2.3 billion, and from financial year 2023, we'll put in another $2.3 billion. Some of that is non-military aid, some of that is the likes of humanitarian support such as generators, some of that is obviously military hardware, some of it is training. We train 10,000 we trained Ukrainians in the UK, and we'll train another 20,000 in the UK. And some of it is effectively backfilling British stocks. So stocks we've given away, we need to replace to make sure our armed forces are up to date and on the forefront of being able to defend ourselves. So that's what makes up the $2.3 billion. We're committed to another $2.3 billion for 2023.
Well, a court in junta-ruled Myanmar finds ousted leader Aung San Suu Kyi guilty on five counts of corruption. The court has ordered Suu Kyi to serve seven more years in jail. The offenses are related to her lease and use of a helicopter while she was Myanmar's de facto leader. The latest court ruling wraps up the remaining cases against her. Suu Kyi's new verdict adds to sentences of at least 26 years, which ranged from corruption to illegally owning radio equipment. The former leader has denied all charges against her. Last week, the UN Security Council adopted the first ever resolution on Myanmar that called on the military junta to release all political prisoners. Myanmar's military seized power in February last year over alleged voter fraud during the 2020 elections. And South Korea will dramatically increase its military spending next year with hundreds of millions earmarked for anti-drone weapons. This after five North Korean drones entered South Korean territory earlier this week. Frank Smith reports from the South Korean capital, Seoul.
South Korea plans to significantly boost military spending over the next 5 years, an annual increase of nearly 7%. The Eastern Asian country aims to spend over $440 million on anti-drone weapons alone. The announcement comes only days after North Korea flew drones into the South's territory for the first time in 5 years.
According to South Korea's Joint Chiefs of Staff, Monday, five North Korean drones crossed the border before breaking formation. Four of them headed to islands in the West Sea, while one of the drones continued south, reaching the skies over the outskirts of this city, the capital, Seoul.
It was the first such incident since 2017 when a drone crossed into South Korea and photographed a U.S. base here. South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol, a conservative who came to office in May of this year, has blamed the previous progressive government's policy of engaging Pyongyang for the recent incident.
Given that efforts or military training to respond to such UAV drones have never been properly done since 2017, I think our people must have well seen how dangerous a policy relying on an old good faith and peace agreements would be.
South Korea plans more joint military exercises with the U.S. for 2023, although much of the public wants talks with North Korea and a de-escalation of tensions. Meanwhile, North Korea has unveiled new goals for the country's military. Addressing a large committee meeting of the ruling Workers' Party, leader Kim Jong-un indicated on Wednesday that the country will continue its military development in 2023 after a record year of missile testing. Frank Smith, Seoul.
And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
Special live coverage for the start of New Year 2023 on Saturday, December 31st at 7:30 p.m. Tehran time, 1600 GMT.
School of Soleimani. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. As we approach the anniversary of martyrdom of the great anti-terror general and commander of hearts, Qasem Soleimani, we have prepared a five-part series to commemorate this unmatched general. Stay tuned for the second part. This episode will be dedicated to General Soleimani's role in the 8-year Holy Defense. The former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein of the minority Ba'ath Party started the invasion of the Iranian soil in 1980 with the green light of the Western regimes, especially the U.S. While he thought of taking Khuzestan province in 3 days and capturing Tehran in 2 weeks, he faced the youth who resisted their country and the Islamic Revolution valiantly and selflessly. They stood against Saddam's armed-to-the-teeth invading army with bare hands. Haj Qasem Soleimani was one of these brave youths. The great commander writes in his autobiography, "In the first days of going to the front, I considered the enemy able to do anything. But as we carried out the first attack, we succeeded to push back the enemy forces from Susangird Road up to the Hamidiyeh. This removed the faults of the enemy from my mind." Qasem Soleimani, like other brave commanders of the Holy Defense, had grown up in the spiritual atmosphere spread by the father of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini. The Imam would do everything only for God's sake. He would put his trust in God and was the humble servant of God. Martyr Soleimani was the student of Imam Khomeini's spiritual school. Abbas Qutbuddini, one of the frogmen of Sarallah 41 Division of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, says, "We were getting prepared for an operation. Haj Qasem came to see the group. He told the trainer to choose one of the forces to see his skill. The trainer told me, 'Go inside water, but take care not to mess up in front of Haj Qasem.' The water was cold. When I came out, Haj Qasem encouraged me, but I didn't understand why he was upset and frowning. A few minutes later, when I went to him and asked him if I had done any mistake, he smiled at me and said, 'Brother, I am no one to tell you to die for me. When you wear the frogman suit, know that God is present and sing and say in your heart, I don't do anything except for God's satisfaction. I die for God and I ask him martyrdom. Whenever and wherever you live, consider God's satisfaction as a priority.'" Haj Qasem Soleimani was the commander of the IRGC Sarallah 41 Division during the 8-year imposed war. This division was a brigade in the beginning, and many of his forces had been martyred in the first days of the war. Qasem Soleimani formed the first corps of the brigade in 1981 with a few experienced forces. After 1 year, the brigade increased to 3 brigades and an armored battalion to form a division. Martyr Soleimani's forces were famous for breaking the lines of the enemy. He was very careful in picking commanders. One of the most memorable pages of the honorable history of the Holy Defense was Karbala 5 operation. Lieutenant General Soleimani writes on the operation, "If I say that on the day of Karbala 5 operation, another Karbala took place beside Imam Hussein's Karbala, and all those sacrifices, selflessness, and values that had been shown by Imam Hussein's companions happened during this operation, I have not said an idle talk. We had bright and great figures among ourselves, each of whom we miss. They were the persons who were sitting in the trenches, either reciting the Quran, praying, or writing their last will. They were certainly welcoming death." Karbala 5 operation was one of the fateful battles of the Holy Defense. Saddam had increased more than 10 times his military organization. He had provided the army with state-of-the-art weapons and equipment. The enemy had nearly 5,000 tanks and 4,000 personnel carriers. They had AWACS spying aircrafts and radar systems, which could detect forces according to their temperature. Thus, the detection of the operation was very easy for the enemy. Martyr Soleimani says, "When I refer to that period, I feel that neither that valor, nor that thought, nor those persons belong to this terrestrial world. God created those sins, and it was His will which ruled and created that atmosphere. Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani continues in his autobiography, "One of the features of our war that removed asymmetries were the initiatives which occurred on the scene of the Holy Defense. The difference between us and the classic armies in the world, besides the spiritual and behavioral issues, was the difference between come and go. Our commander would stand in front and say, 'Come,' but the classic commander would stand at the back saying, 'Go.' Standing in front and saying 'come' has great effects and created great sacrifices. Therefore, the number of our martyred commanders is not comparable with any war. During the imposed war, out of the 12 new-founded IRGC divisions, 7 commanders were martyred. Nearly 80% of the battalion commanders were martyred. Had there not been the breaking of lines and standing in front, this would not have happened. When a commander said, 'Come,' the role of that commander was like a queen bee. Thus, all bees would gather around her."
Quran Quest, a program on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. To all our brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. You are listening to IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran. The program is Quran Quest, where we study the verses of the Quran and learn from them with our dear and beloved Sheikh Habib. Sheikh Habib, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thank you for having me.
We are in chapter 74 of the Quran, when we've reached verse 8 of this chapter. It's been a splendid trip with Sheikh Habib through these verses. We've learned quite a lot. Let's listen to verses 1 to 10 of this chapter, and we'll be back for the discussion. Don't go away.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajeem. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
يا أيها المدثر.
O you who covers himself with a garment.
قم فأنذر.
Arise and warn.
ورب
And your Lord glorify. And your clothing purify. And uncleanliness avoid. And do not confer favor to acquire more. But for your Lord be patient. And when the trumpet is blown,
فَذَلِكَ يَوْمَئِذٍ يَوْمٌ عَسِيرٌ
That day will be a difficult day.
على الكافرين غير يسير.
For the disbelievers, not easy.
You're back on IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran. This is Quran Quest, and you just listened to the first verses of chapter 74 of the Quran. Brother Habib, on verse 8 and 9 and 10, it says, "When the trumpet will be sounded, that will be a day of hardship, not at all easy for the faithless." We talked about how at the beginning the Prophet is told to warn, and apparently here it is. Here is the warning.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Here's the start of what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala warned of. And the trumpet that will be blown by Israfil. Either the interpreters of course differ. Some of them state what is meant is the first one. Some of them state the second time. Some of them state that نقر في النقل, talking generally. And at the end of the day, what is going to happen is that Israfil will blow, as the saying is available in Tafsir al-Qummi. It will blow. And when it blows, everyone will die. Everything will die.
Everything
will think. Die. Everything that has life to it will die. Keep in mind, plants have some extent of life to it. Something to keep in mind. Again, he will blow again, and then they will come back to life. When they come back to life, the thing that you have been denying is now a reality.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a horrific scene that you illustrated.
It is very horrific when you have not been doing the correct actions for that day. Mm-hmm. And really, it really just wakes you up for the purpose of life. Mm-hmm. I mean, have you just sat down and just thought to yourself, you know, I remember when I was a teen, I remember like I was on the roof of a high building. There were cars. It was a hotel. There were cars beneath. And you're just looking like, this car is going home. This car might be going to a restaurant. The person inside this car is having different people, different problems.
Person going on with their own life.
We're all living. What is the purpose of our life? Are we, or were we created or brought in this world to be like sheep, eat and sleep? Because I've seen sheep a lot. They sleep, they eat, they do their things, and that's it. That's their life. They get slaughtered. Are we like sheep? Or is there something more important? This life is only a bridge. There's something on the other side that's more important.
Yeah, I've also had that experience standing like on a building and watching the traffic beneath me and thinking all the hustle and bustle and all the busyness, and nobody is really thinking about what they should be thinking about, which is the day of judgment. People are just living in the moment without thinking about the future, really. Very short-sighted, myopic kind of look at life, outlook to life. All right, thanks. Let's take a break now, and we'll be back just after the break to read and learn more. Don't go away.
إن سألتم عن الله فهو رحمن رحيم أنزل الشارع حنيفا رحمة للعالمين رحمة للعالمين.
This is Quran Quest on IRIB English Radio. It's a program that attempts to answer your questions pertaining to the Noble Quran. We'd be delighted to have your comments about the program. Just search Quran Quest on IRIB English Radio.
If you ask me who my God is, on whose name I call, if you ask me who my God is, He's the God of us all, Allah the Merciful. If you ask me what my book is that I hold in my hand, if you ask me what my book is, it's the Holy Quran, the Holy Quran.
You're back on IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran. This is Quran Quest. We're on verses 8, 9, and 10 of chapter 74 of the Quran. On verse 9, it reads, "That will be a day of hardship." Can you explain that a little bit to us?
How can I explain it? How can I explain it, brother? You imagine yourself waking up from your death and seeing that the day of judgment has come and you're empty-handed. You have not done enough for the hereafter. You have done so many things wrong in your life. You're empty-handed. Not only are you empty-handed, people are asking for the rights from you. What are you going to do?
You have nothing and there are people who you owe.
Yeah. What are you going to do? It really is a severe day.
There's no job and there. Nothing.
You can't gain nothing on that day. Yeah. There's no more gaining. What you had the chance to gain, it finished. Mm-hmm. It finished. You're standing there now alone. No one to back you up. What are you going to do? What did you put forward? And of course, me and you are Arab. We've lived in, you know, in the Qom era, the Iraq era, where it states, نَحْنَ غَيْرَ حُسَيْنَ مَا عَنَّا وَسِيلَةً. Other than Hussein, we do not have a caravan. We do not have anything to take us to
any other help.
To safe land, mm-hmm. other than Hussein alayhi salam. And really, it just goes back to this. What are the actions that we can do so on the day of judgment we do not go light-handed?
Mm-hmm. And what are the hardships that are being talked about here?
First of all, you're getting up, you're standing up. The darkness, no food, no water.
A new environment.
This new environment, people are ready for the day of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. An all just Lord is standing, either hell or that's by itself. If you're seeing hell, you're seeing the angels dragging you for the day of judgment.
Yeah,
that's enough for you. See, we imagine it,
but
we may feel like it's expressions. Mm-hmm. Here, it's not expressing, Habibi. It's a severe day. Mm-hmm. This day is gonna hurt. This day is the day. And that is why it's been repeated and repeated and repeated in the Holy Quran. Wake up. Wake up. You know, we were joking before the show. We should have called the Quran the book about the day of judgment. But in reality, it's the most important day of every human being's life. It's a pivotal moment in the purpose of creation. The reason that we have been brought to this world. The reason that we are living, we're breathing, we're striving, thinking about selling tomatoes on the streets.
It's all about reaching that day.
It's all about reaching
safely
that day.
Safely and with abundance.
And yeah, and are we doing really the correct actions for that day? And of course, without that day, people will be corrupt. People will be corrupt. If I didn't believe, I've said it a couple of times on the show, and I say it again. If I didn't believe in the day of judgment, the first thing I would do is rob a bank. First thing I would do. As easy as that. Why? Who's going to catch me?
There's no retribution
for that. I'm going to either live wealthy or I'm going to die. One of the two. There's no person or nothing to come and judge me later on. Why did I steal? Why did I do that? Why did I kill? Why did I backbite? Why did I hurt that person? No. Nothing. If that's the mentality of a society, then of course that society will be corrupt. Mm-hmm. There are no laws to gain it. Even if there were laws, there were cameras and there were everything. If these cameras were to, shut down. Who says that corruption won't be available?
And it's a day when we rise there, we rise defenseless with all of the deeds that we have done to answer for. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. Well, where are you going to run away? Mm-hmm. It's not a day of running away. Wala tahina manas. We talked about that. It's not a day of running away. It's not a day to sit down and just regret. It's a day where you're going to feel what you've done.
Thank you very much. Let's take a break now. We'll be back to talk about the next verse just after the break. Don't go away.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
You're back on IRIB English Radio, broadcasting from Iran. This is Quran Quest, and we are on verse 10 of the Quran. First of all, we said that God is talking about the beginning of the Day of Judgment and saying it's a day of hardship. I think it's a day that we will be regretting every single moment, the tiniest moment, even a second, that we missed while we were alive. And whether we are faithful or faithless.
There is a saying available to aid your words that states that everyone on the day of judgment will have this regret in them. Whether the regret for not getting a higher status in the paradise, or whether the regret of, falling into the pit of hell. So at the end of the day, it's a day of regret. It's a day of, where we wish we would have done more. We would have woken up. We would have, contributed more. We finish the show right now, me and you, Hussein. We go back home. Who says we're going to do as we are? Mm-hmm. First thing I'm going to do is go sit down, lay down. My back is killing me, for example.
Yeah, but even a rest for a faithful person is ibad, isn't it?
To some extent, yes. Every action a believer can make as an ibad. Mm-hmm. Even when you're eating. Why are you eating? By your intention. Say, I'm eating so I gain the power so I can worship Allah subhanahu mm-hmm. wa ta'ala. There is this mentality available out there. But also there's sometimes the shaitan comes and plays around and, makes you forget.
Okay, thank you very much. On verse 10, it says, so I was making this point that it's a moment where we will be regretting everything, every moment that we missed, whether even if we're faithful. On verse 10, it says, It's a day that is not at all easy for the faithless. So, I mean, if it's so difficult and regrettable for the faithful, I can't imagine how it's going to be for the faithless.
Yeah, especially those who had knowledge. Because, look, the concept of mustadaf also has to be put out there. Those who are weak in knowledge or those who are unable to obtain the true,
the true
concept of Islam.
One reason or another, unable to understand the truth.
Didn't search for the truth. They had the opportunity to search for it, but they didn't search for it. This mustadaf, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will have mercy upon them if their actions were moral. They were upright to their extent. Allah will judge the people. By the amount of intellect he gave them. Yet, the person who had knowledge and stayed away, best example, Pharaoh, the best example of the Qurayshi kuffar, those disbelievers from the Qurayshi tribe, they knew that the Prophet ﷺ was right. As we will see in the coming verses, when we talk about verses 11 and onwards, we'll talk about how they knew that the Prophet was righteous, yet they were not willing to let go of the materialistic world that they gained, the high status and positions that they had, for the sake of the hereafter. They literally sold their world for they literally sold the hereafter to live a couple of years, 60 years. And of course, when you look at their lives, I mean, just pay attention to it. They had no restrooms like we had. They had no air conditioning like we had. They had no pest. It wasn't even worth it. The way that they were living, it was all power, money, children, food. That's it.
For a couple of years. Max.
Yeah, and I fall into shock sometimes. How can someone, when they have knowledge about the righteousness of a thing, but at the end of the day, this world,
it's deceptive. And if you're not careful every day,
Even us. Yes, maybe one day we might fall into this trap. Wal-'iyadh billah. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to aid us.
Protect us. If you're not careful, there's any moment might be the moment where you slip once and for all. Okay, thank you very much, Brother Habib. It's always nice talking to you. I'm afraid that's all the time that we have. But if you missed it, don't worry. You can always download an archive of this episode or our previous episodes from our website. Simply search IRIB English Radio Quran Quest. Remember that we're studying the Quran to learn from it and to implement it in our lives. And you're accompanying us on this path. Thank you very much. Until next week. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Quran Quest, the program that answers your Quranic questions.
Join us in this journey. This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Was born in a village in the heart of the desert. At the age of 5, he became a shepherd in the village, a young shepherd who grazed sheep with his bare feet, and at night his mother would remove the thorns off his hands and feet with a needle. During the entire fall and winter, he worked hard and his hands were frostbitten due to severe cold. Every time the teacher hit him on the back of his hands with a piece of wet branch from pomegranate tree, and he would start crying out loud,
His father would shout from the yard at his house, "Don't hit him. Have a little fairness. Qasem's hands are not dirty. His skin has become black." And as far as he could remember, he was always waiting for the spring to come to bring warmth with it. Even though his hands never fired a bullet, they prevented many hands from shedding the blood of innocent people. And after he fell, people in the world didn't shake hands warmly for a long time. A man with a bright future, with a stature to stand tall. Two years later, Israel moved towards Gaza to gain a victory, no matter how small it could be. But it was too late again. Qasem and Imad had made the impossible possible. Gaza had missiles. It's still a mystery to the vast Israeli army that how those several meters long missiles had found their way into the besieged territory. Qasem was now relieved that the Palestinian resistance would continue to live. The only vital and vulnerable point of resistance was its fortress, namely Syria. Going to Syria at a time when the media in the world was interpreting its crisis as the continuation of the Arab revolutions in Egypt, Tunisia, and Libya was a big question mark even for Qasem's friends. A question that had no answer for a long time other than trusting Qasem. A year later, the day eventually came when the Syrian capital, Damascus, was on the verge of collapse. The so-called Free Syrian Army was advancing towards Damascus with the open support from the U.S. military on the one hand, and the Syrian branch of Al-Qaeda, or Jabhat al-Nusra, with militants from various countries and financial and logistical support from Saudi Arabia, Turkey, and Qatar on the other. Popular opposition to the Syrian government was just beginning to discover the dimensions of the story. As the resistance front acted more diligently, the hostile fronts, to which the UAE had also joined by then, would give more money, equipment, and facilities to the armed opposition groups who were against the Syrian government. Until a new armed group called ISIL or Daesh joined them. A year later, Daesh, that had occupied large swaths of the Syrian territory, sent some of its forces to Iraq. This ball of fire went as far as just 45 kilometers away from Iran. Hajj Qasem reached a battlefield against Daesh when they had crossed Tikrit and reached Samarra after occupying Mosul. Qasem had predicted it months ago, but some Iraqi politicians did not take it seriously. The Kurdish leader thought that Daesh would pose a threat against the central government in the worst-case scenario, not the Kurdish people. Qasem immediately arrived in Erbil and, with only 70 men, stopped the Daesh attack. The siege on Erbil broke, but the main danger was still there. Daesh was on its way to Baghdad. Qasem had to organize the Iraqi volunteer and popular forces very quickly. It required dozens of experienced and, more importantly, Arabic-speaking military field commanders. Sayed's efforts continued until the morning call to prayer. Qasem left Sayed's office, dozens of Hezbollah field commanders from Beirut and the others were waiting for him at the Damascus airport so they could fly to Baghdad. Qasem was very close to death many times those days, just like many other young Iraqis who fought alongside him, and the code word for all those epics was a fatwa, or religious decree. Although Qasem was in Syria and Iraq on an official visit, he mainly relied on the volunteer popular forces to fight against terrorists, especially in Iraq. Those days, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis was Qasem's right-hand man in organizing the forces in Iraq. These young people were often not familiar with the basics of military affairs. Saving the lives of people in their country and concerns about the return of the Americans under the pretext of fighting Daesh were the main reasons that pushed them to militarism. Towards the end of 2017, they turned the tables. By that time, Mosul, the self-proclaimed capital of Daesh in Iraq, and afterwards most of the group's occupied territories in Syria, had been liberated one after another. Qasem did his job. He succeeded in creating an efficient, fast, and flexible popular force, a force that could help its division against any threat. In addition to the Lebanese, Iraqi, and Syrian resistance forces, volunteers from Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Iran gradually joined them. These young people were called Defenders of the Shrine. In 2017, Daesh seemed to have reached the end of the line. But the U.S. tried to protect the remnants of Daesh by creating a no-fly zone on the Iraqi-Syrian border area. The remote border town was the last Daesh stronghold west of the Euphrates, where, according to U.S. military estimates, could not be captured even by someone like Qasem. But things turned out differently. Qasem personally commanded the operation. His plan to attack was even beyond the wildest dreams. Qasem first liberated the northern city of Bu Kamal. But afterwards, contrary to everyone's expectations, he led his forces to the gates of Bu Kamal from a most unlikely route. A route through the scorching desert of Syria.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.